among individuals as among nations, respect for the rights of others is peace. Benito Juarez. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, the host. A little later on, we'll be speaking to Aidan Jonah, the CanadaFiles.com, about independent journalism in Canada and the need to sharpen everyone's awareness of and resistance to illegal and imperialistic conduct by primarily Washington, France, UK, with Canada bringing up the rear, but a loyal member nonetheless. I want to start, obviously it's everyone's on everybody's mind. We're seeing the headlines and about matters to do with Afghanistan, Canada, and I think there's a troubling trend, which is the notion that somehow or another, because Canada 10 years ago or more had armed personnel there together with like-minded NATO people, interfering and trying to dictate the outcome of life in Afghanistan, an old colonial problem and habit. But because of the current crisis, that is of the rise to power, the overrunning of Afghanistan by Afghans, and the return to power of organization called the Taliban, although it's already an organization with its own allies. It's a big country, 38 million people, rough terrain, and it's historically difficult to rule, particularly if you're a foreigner. But this issue of the defeat of the government and the U.S. peculiar role in deciding to on how it would exit the country has, of course, created a melodrama which is causing great confusion in people's minds here, because there's in order to talk about Afghanistan, our political masters in Canada, United States, elsewhere, particularly the UK, have to turn themselves into knots explaining what they're doing and what they thought they were doing. And there is this, of course, a question of how to save Afghani individuals who were somehow or another allied, we're told, with the Canadian forces. And in talking about it, you notice there's an unstated premise. You know the old, you know how they say, if you can tell a joke if you buy the, if the listener buys the premise, then you tell the joke. The premise is that Canada was there for good reasons, and we were on the side of the angels. And of course, angel number one is the United States, but it's also the locals. And so now we are hearing both in US and Canada about what we owe to Afghanis who are at the airport. And we're not getting much realism. I think the most laughable quote of the week, this would have to be the Record. This is, of course, one of Canada's political leaders. This would be Mr. O'Toole. Here's what he had to say. After 6 months of inaction by the Trudeau government, there are millions of Afghans who are in danger because of their support for our country. I think that would be news to the Afghans. Millions supporting, they were there because they were supporting Canada. If we were going to step back a moment, allegedly the Afghans were fighting over what type of government to have. They weren't fighting over whether or not to support Canada. And as far as I'm concerned, he's in cloud cuckoo land, but that doesn't matter. I mean, he, by the way, he's at the moment ahead, they say, in popular vote, which tells us the land itself might be cuckoo. But this idea that if you serve there, you have some sacred right to go be there. And if you lost a fellow soldier, then somehow that makes it Canadian territory. That is a premise in a lot of the discussion. And it's, of course, more so when we're hearing from the United States. The way they're telling the story, which is to go a good half of programming now, as I would think, commentary, a lot of it, is interviews with people who they say, well, you were a colonel, you were a general, and you served there. How do you feel? In politics, that is what the general thinks and what the ordinary soldier thinks really has nothing to do with it. Corporals and privates, and there are lower folks in private, they have no say. It was never their idea in the first place to be there. So to suddenly say, well, how do you feel about that? Is really, of course, and they know how to play, they found the people they want to talk to. And these are all people who have a premise that, well, we went there to liberate them and we didn't get the job done. And so we're headed for Rambo territory. Stallone, if he's still breathing, has a good shot at a new movie. This will be Rambo 97, in which once again, the aggrieved, injured, wounded soul of the invading soldier comes to life, and he returns once again to his duty, and of course wipes out all the bad guys. That's where our discussion is, political discussion is being taken up. The Toronto Star ran an article, and where they featured our Minister of Defense, I guess he is, Harjit Sajjan. And they talk about he was honored for his service and et cetera. And he says at the end of his interview, he says, the raw emotions being stirred up now are felt by him too. We left part of our soul there. Well, not that I know of. And by the way, the Afghans who were looking at an army that Canada supported, and noticed that it disintegrated. So you actually left behind an army. They said it was 300,000. I saw an interview with a minority view British soldier. He said it's all baloney, and he's tired of the people romanticizing and lying about what was going on there. He said, by the way, there weren't 300,000. He said a lot of those generals faked the numbers so that they could take the money. It had, you know, you're supposed to pay soldiers. So the general reports he's got 20,000 men when he's actually got 5. That's 15,000 pieces of income that he just takes with him. The man who ran away, the president, they said took 169 million with him. I haven't heard whether he thought he left his soul behind, but for our former soldiers to be talking this way is childish. It reveals a lack of, I'd say, professionalism. They don't seem to understand what service to your country is supposed to be when you're in the military. I don't mind saying over and over, I was in the military. Everybody in my family was in Marine Corps, all the men. The And the joy of it is that you do as you're told. You follow orders. You're told what the mission is. And if the mission is not illegal, according to your the rationale, then you're supposed to carry it out. And if you're given orders, by the way, to shoot at civilians, you're supposed to tell the commanding officer you're not going to do that. It's part of your job. No one here seems to be talking like that. If you're a soldier, follow orders, don't break the law, try to be successful. But don't come home and say, oh, I trained them and I'm in love with them and that it really means a lot to me and I need to go back or we have to do something. There's no foundation for that. What happened was that the Afghan army got beaten. It's called the Afghan army. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. They didn't seem to be much of an army. There was a very substantial army, which, because of its nature, tends to be much closer to being what they call a people's army, because it didn't have an air force, doesn't have a navy. It didn't rely on foreign fighters. And so it probably is closer, much closer to the people than the people than those who they were fighting. And this premise that we have somebody there that we have to go and get or help is gets you way outside the mission. There is a way to get people out who are identified by the retreating element, and in this case, the United States, and they say to the party that won, we want to make arrangements for those who were working with us, and we hope that we can do that. Here's the little secret that Canadian people aren't being told loudly enough. The Taliban has been cooperating. That, who's my source? Oh, George. No, I started calling George Bush. Joe Biden. Because for more than a year, the U.S., for much longer than a year, the U.S. has been talking to the Taliban because it was understood that it didn't look too good for this very corrupt man who called himself the president and his army. And so part of the conversation, I don't know if people like to hear this, part of the conversation is, okay, we're going to need to, if you are to succeed and we're not fighting you anymore, that's between you and the other guy, then we would like to make the following arrangements. The Taliban agreed to that. So we've been trying to have two stories at once. They said, oh, thousands are going to the airport, but the Taliban aren't letting them through. Well, but hundreds, thousands were actually leaving as well. They're telling us really rather large numbers of people leaving, Americans and people identified as on their payroll or associated with them. And that's happening because there was a mutual understanding. At the top of the show, I quoted Benito Juarez, who says, mutual respect means peace. And if you're a soldier, what it means is my commanding officer spoke to your commanding officer, and they have agreed that we're to deal with one another in the following way, which doesn't involve us attacking each other, but it means we cooperate. You have people there that are identified as your people, our people, whatever, you bring them, and we see that they are safely transported. That is actually what happened. But we had to have our backstory of crying and whining and confusion over who the enemy is. The Taliban is not the enemy because the America is not at war with them. Please grow up. Please understand. You can't just make these things out of whole cloth. You don't get to have your sentimental stories. The government lost, and some of those people want to leave, and the Taliban agreed to, through negotiations, to facilitate that. So now you have the paranoid people saying, oh, golly, you gave them the names. Yes, we did. That's how they got to the airport. And we have, of course, and it's an element who wants to go on about how they feel about it. It doesn't, that's beside the point. And I'm beginning to think we have military here, Canada and the United States, which is kind of losing its discipline or its sense of what a military mission is. And privates don't get to run the army. And actually, generals don't get to make the decisions. That's the political group makes the decisions. Anyway, the story is being badly twisted. We're going to return to this subject later in the show, but now, coming up, we have an interview with Aidan Jonah about his journal, thecanadafiles.com. I'm going to quote it again, that mutual respect amongst nations as amongst people makes for peace, and that is the wise words of Benito Juarez, the first great democratic Mexico, president of Mexico, a figure of a giant in our hemisphere, not spoken of in Canada because he spoke Spanish. And people say North America, they never include Mexico, though it's part of North America. And when we talk about how to behave in the world, we never consult our friends in Mexico, which is a democratic government, and they don't agree with a damn thing that we say about the world, starting with China, Venezuela, Peru. Wherever you point, Mexico has its own point of view. Canada needs to look at them occasionally and say, golly, they seem to be independent. And I wonder how that happened. And some might tell you, well, look up the name Zapata, Pancho Villa. That's part of why. This is the Taylor Report. We were speaking earlier about this phenomenon of embracing the lie and the romance associated with rescuing people around the world. And the notion that we are rescuers and that what we do is humanitarian intervention. And I want to mention there's a group in the United States that are appearing on CNN, and I'm watching the interviewers, and they are breathless and near tears, and they always thank you for your service, and we are perplexed and bewildered at what President Biden has done, and you are a veteran, thank you for your service, you're a veteran. And you and your friends are doing everything you can to rescue those people because the ineptitude of the government is blah, blah. So they call it, here's what they call themselves, the Digital Dunkirk. So again, we're approaching cuckoo land. Dunkirk was at the beginning of World War II. By the way, real war, not a foreign expeditionary war, such as the British and the American and Canada always went along to help carry the flag. But a real war happened, and it was Germany was attacking France and Belgium and Holland. They'd already conquered Holland. And the Belgian king, after saying he wanted help, he was going to stand up to the Germans. The British hardly got their men on the ground before the Belgian king surrendered and moved somewhere. I forget where. I guess it was in the Caribbean. And thousands and thousands of British soldiers were trapped. You can watch the movie Dunkirk. It's sort of true. All the bunch of things, naturally. Hollywood and the British movies, everybody does propaganda. But that was a real war. Those were armed soldiers. They were at war, and the Germans were trying either to kill them or capture them. And the flotilla of combination Navy, British Navy, British Air Force, and private yachts, private boats, picked up the British soldiers. They were being fired on and bombed by the attacking Germans. And it was a brilliant success. So I'd like to ask these guys who claim they were in the military, what do you think the connection is here? The British Army hadn't surrendered. Those weren't civilians loyal to the British who were standing saying, would you pick us up? You hadn't negotiated a deal with the Germans to have them removed. Afghanistan is a totally different story. The army collapsed. Taliban took power. It's time to talk reality. And hats off for the moment, and just to say, it was a guy called Taliban Jack Layton, way back, who said we should talk to the Taliban. By the way, I'm sure Mr. Singh will not say that now, because that was intelligent and might have actually been helpful and saved a lot of lives. So we're back to the same intersection. You're going to talk or not? They have power. They do talk to their neighbors. And we pointed out on the Taylor Report, talking to your neighbors is the first job of a government in that region. And they have sworn to their neighbors, who include Turkey, India, China, Russia, that they're not going to cause problems. Did I say Iran? Iran. They're not going to have a problem on their border. That's the first question a neighboring country wants to know. And then they say they will behave in a way to so as to build mutual respect, as referenced by Benito Juarez. We don't want to do that. Instead, we want to begin to peddle outrageous malarkey, lies, and to pretend that we need people who think they're at Dunkirk to interfere in the workings of a peace process and a safe settlement ending this war. So, and the trend, and it's very evident in Canada already, it is you see it particularly in the United States, to engage in a kind of soldier idolatry of, you know, the politicians failed, but the heroic soldiers didn't let us down. By golly, those Marines were there, and that we can be proud of. And nothing good to say about the politicians, but those brave men and women. Okay, I get it, but the dangerous part is that political career is already being polished up. A good number of right-wing politicians, and certainly politicians who promote the Pentagon and promote the arms industry and promote intervening in other countries, are veterans. And they money gets behind them because they run on their wounds. And when they misrepresent things, incidentally, they're not speaking for veterans. Please understand. I grew up on a street full of veterans. I saw fist fights at the Veterans of Foreign Wars. I saw fist fights at the American Legion Hall because they didn't like each other. But so when somebody says he's a veteran, please keep your hat on your head and just talk like an ordinary person and try to do your role as a functioning citizen to understand what the problems are and try to help solve them. But if you start this thing of stroking somebody because he's got a medal on his chest, you're really headed for trouble. I mention this partly because there's a very famous corporal from World War I. Actually, it wasn't even a corporal. It was a lance corporal. I was a lance corporal, so I know how low down that is. And he had been wounded twice. And he said the Germans had been sold out by their politicians, particularly the Social Democrats. And the national prestige and pride had to be restored, and that they had to be respected again. That's why I mentioned Rambo earlier. That's all Rambo is about. And when they start saying, here, oh, well, you know, you're the guy, you served, and you shed blood. That was exactly the speech. You're stealing from the famous corporal. That's exactly his pitch. And he was popular because, of course, I mean, there were people who were begging, who had some self-respect before the war. And the only thing they had on their backs were uniforms. And we have a lot of people begging and asking for handouts or trying to get medical care and whatnot, who served the Americans overseas. There is this group. And you have to be careful how that issue is addressed, because it can be exploited. And because someone served, and he says, I was a veteran, all you're hearing is an individual. And if he says, I got 8,000 more guys, oh, congratulations. After the Vietnam War, there were Vietnams for the war and Vietnam veterans against the war. But to turn it over to one group, and particularly to invite them to butt in, I would say to them, I'm not sure you understand what serving means. You don't have any business getting involved. I read a Toronto Star story which said, they were talking to former veteran soldiers here, and they said, oh, we know we have some special forces there. And the special forces are always the glamour boys. I'm not a believer in them. And they said, they're outside the perimeter and they're trying to find people to help them. Well, if they were, that means you're violating the agreement struck by the United States and the Taliban as to how to resolve the problem. So are you sure they're outside the perimeter? And if they are, if they're outside the perimeter at the airport, they have to be under orders. The protocol has to be, they have to be working together with the Taliban, because otherwise they are targets, legitimate targets. Are there orders to violate the agreement? Here in North America, people seem to think, oh, yeah, let's violate the agreement. That's a good way to put people in danger. It's outrageous. It's stupid. And by the way, for an ex-soldier to be talking about he says, oh, I got buddies over there and they're outside the perimeter. I saw some kind of quote like that. Well, it's none of your business. And who told you to pass along information of that type? Because the question we have to ask is, does that mean that you are coordinating with the government of Afghanistan? There is a government now. It is not the one that ran away to the Emirates or wherever it was, UAE, with the people's money. That is not the government. There is a government. And it's been involved in negotiations for years with the U.S. government and with the Pentagon, and all the soldiers in the neighborhood, all the officers are actually talking to each other. So if you are a freelancer, the best I can say for you is you ought to have your head examined. Because all you're doing is creating havoc. And the local media people ought to stop panting along behind you and say, oh, you're a soldier. So you're a soldier. You're not a political scientist and you're not elected to anything. And if you run for office, I'll vote against you. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. Speaking of voting, Toronto Star, Saturday the 28th, had a headline, what's a progressive voter to do? With the Conservatives and NDP gaining ground and the prospect of a Liberal victory increasingly uncertain, Canadians on the left may be facing a familiar dilemma. That's written by one of the smarter people in the Star, not terribly smart, but Chantal Abib. But the answer to this is a tough answer. None of the above. The political parties of Canada, we said this on the show previous, are neocolonial in their outlook. They are part of an imperialist gang led by NATO. They have, and I'm talking about all of them, the only one that maybe might occasionally get a little outside the lines is the Bloc Québécois for historical reasons. Look up your Canadian history book and find out why. Their leader, Blanchet, in the previous debate, said Canada is trying to pretend it's a bigger, tougher country than it is, and that's because of its association with the Americans, and it has harmed business in Canada. And it has made us look a little foolish. By the way, none of the other parties answered when he said that, because they knew that every time they would say something, he would pick up more votes. And besides that, he was making perfect sense, which is very dangerous in Canada politics. Issue number one, Canadian Parliament wholeheartedly supported a resolution 266-0, insulting and smearing a developing country called China. And if you don't understand it, accusing, and remember I used the word mutual respect among nations, that's for peace. When you accuse a country, a major country, a developing country, of genocide, casually, your parliament does it, and all the parties voted for it. It was a conservative motion. Mr. O'Toole, you know, he's the one I quoted earlier. He said that the Afghans fought for us because they're on our side. Still can't figure out what he thought he meant by that, but anyhow, they put the motion. The NDP tooted the whistle and jumped in line. And the Liberal Party members, most of them, voted for it. Conservatives, of course, voted for it. The Bloc voted for it. The government, because they actually have some responsibilities, the cabinet members did not. I will give them credit for understanding how deep how far toward the bottom of the ocean they were headed if they did vote for that. But it happened. And the Liberal Party put itself through its MPs on the record. That's a non-starter. We cannot have leaders who are this inept, this foolish. I know that the American Congress is that foolish, but if that's your measure, I mean, you really entering the zoo and need to be locked up with them. The premise, the pretext that provides is for sanctions, intervention, and war. Because you cannot use a word like genocide, which has its heaviest resonance from the war. World War II, the Jews were massacred in the millions. And because you want, because the United States wants to play games, they compare the condition of a people called the Uyghurs with that of what happened in World War II. That is obscene. It's and politically inane to talk like that. But we're talking about a parliament, and we're talking about these parties. Canadian people have to, for their own safety, have to reject that kind of conduct. We need a fully grown adult party that will say, actually, as the Prime Minister himself said, well, we'd actually, you know, this is a question and we are concerned. Okay, that's what a grown-up said. But the Canadian Parliament and that Liberal Leaders Party all voted the other way as though they knew something. The only thing they know is what they and other Europeans agree to. They speak of international community. The international community does not agree. The Muslim countries, we're talking about a Muslim population. The Muslim countries do not accuse China of this. Recently, there was a visit to China and to Xinjiang by the, I think it was foreign minister of Iran. He said, I met the imams, I attended the mosque. I understand their situation. Of course, by the way, they are a neighbor. They do know, I mean, they're in the region. They know the story of these peoples. There are many neighbors to Xinjiang, quite familiar. Canada would never think of listening to them, of course, because we are the Anglo-American, English-speaking, white, well-armed and filthy rich group of nations that got filthy rich by through slavery and colonization and genocide against indigenous people. That's who we are. And so when Christopher Freeland, my favorite, or the others talk about the Uyghurs, you know they're blowing smoke. They couldn't care less. It's like when they speak of Afghanistan, they bring up women. Well, the countries we're closest to in the Middle East are monarchies. And they're nominally Muslim. By the way, even they don't accuse China of these things. But they are closest friends, and they completely oppress their whole societies, but particularly women. But we don't say anything about that. Hey, that's, don't even bring it up. That's not so, oh, but we're very interested in women. We're very interested in Xinjiang, about which nobody here knows at least slightest thing. But that happened. And you have to draw the line for your own personal integrity and also for the truths and for the need for principled, mutually respectful relations. You have to reject these parties. You have to say you don't play that game. Just because America is on its high horse and feels that it's no longer the supreme everything, and it therefore it is going to try to wreck, cause chaos, whatever they can do, as to, and I'm quoting Joe Biden, they're not going to allow China to become the number one economy in the world. It will not happen, won't happen, said Biden. That's a Trump moment for Biden. Which brings us to the other thing, which can, another reason we shouldn't vote for any of them. And we should, there are people, good people on ballots, and let's search them out. I earlier today received a message from someone who worked very hard on these issues, Karen Rodman. And Karen is, there's a justice peace, I gotta read this right, justicepeaceadvocates.ca. They're pointing out the candidates who are truly principled, who know it's appropriate and necessary that we not allow this game of the demonization of China to go further. And they have to be supported. But there is, when someone says progressive, there's nothing progressive. If somebody has a good domestic program, but a policy of creating havoc in Southeast Asia or in the or South China Seas, or wants to smear a sitting member of the United Nations Security Council with a charge of genocide, that's beyond the pale. It cannot be tolerated and excused. Mr. Singh and his friends and Mr. O'Toole, they've got this thing wrapped around their neck, and they're going to have to take it off, and they're going to have to apologize. I know they're not big people, not capable, but that is what they have to do. this is the Cato Report, CIT 89.5 FM. I got another point here. I want to make sure I see it this week. I've been letting it go by for some time. And that is that Peter Boehnert, writing in the New York Times about 2 weeks ago, unfortunately, his article was published in the New York Times at a time when this whole story was developing about with Afghanistan. Mr. Boehnert frequently writes on American foreign affairs and politics. He's one of the most astute writers on the subject of Israel and Palestine. And I'm going to read you the first paragraph. He says, American politicians often warn that if Iran obtains a nuclear weapon, it will spark a nuclear stampede across the Middle East, allowing Tehran to get the bomb. Senator Menendez, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, predicted could set off a dangerous arms race in the region. In an interview in December, Joe Biden cautioned that if Iran went nuclear, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt might too. He says, the last goddamn thing we need in that part of the world is a buildup of nuclear capability. All right, very nice. Now, Boehnert continues, such statements are so familiar it's easy to overlook their artifice. In warning that Iran could turn the Middle East nuclear, American top politicians imply that the region is nuclear-free now, but it's not. Israel already has nuclear weapons. You never know it from America's leaders, who have spent the last half century feigning ignorance. This deceit undercuts America's supposed commitment to nuclear non-proliferation and distorts the American debate over Iran. It's time for the Biden administration to tell the truth. I'm going to pass on to the closing part of it, Mr. Brainerd's article. It's in the August 11, I believe, New York Times. Everybody should read it. He says the Biden administration is not going to force Israel to give up its nuclear weapons, but that doesn't mean it must undermine America's global credibility and deceive its people by denying the reality. Perhaps a more honest American discussion of Israel's nuclear arsenal will breathe new life into the distant dream of a nuclear-free Middle East. Even if it doesn't happen, it will be bracing after a half century of lying by omission, simply to hear America's leaders tell the truth. It's Peter Brainerd, New York Times. And I say again, I wish I had read this back before, but I want listeners to know about it. I think it's vital that you can't talk about Iran, who doesn't have a nuclear weapon. And one of the reasons I raise this is that the prime minister of Israel was just visiting Biden, and they talked, the prime minister of Israel said that they're watching Iran closely, and they will take steps which they feel might be necessary. And they're way outside the line on this. International law says you can't threaten countries like that, but they're threatening. And we know that they speak of intimidating the Iranians and everybody else, but they have a nuclear bomb themselves. And the only way we're going to get out of this mess is to recognize it. And thank goodness Peter Brainerd raised this, because you weren't going to hear it from, by the way, Canadian parliamentarians. All those parties I just mentioned, they're not interested in talking about Israel's bomb. But there's another point that needs to be struck here, and that is that Iran has an absolute right to respond. And the New York Times, Washington Post, they quote Israeli leaders talking about taking actions, all of which are illegal, all of which could lead to war. And they do not seem to believe that there is any consequence to that. But there is a consequence. Because we're talking, remember Benito Juarez and mutual respect? Those are sovereign countries we're talking about. They have a right to respond. If you talk about attacking them, if you do attack them, they have a right. They're within their legal right and toward the people of those countries. I'm speaking primarily of Iran. They have a right to respond. And it is our duty here in Canada to say, hey, Peter Brainerd raises a good point. We need to remove all nuclear weapons from the Middle East. And you know who else agrees? Every country, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Algeria, you name it, Pakistan, they all agree that the Middle East, that region, there should be no nuclear weapons. Lastly, I'll say again, we have to free Meng Wanzhou. We have to become independent of the United States. They're leading us down the path to war, and we don't have a major political party in Canada that wants to do anything but follow them. This is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report, and we'll see you next week.